To you, it's just a game. For me, it's all I know. I make them remember my name before I have to go. Losing, I can't fathom. That's a champion's passion. Confidence never lacking. Drop the beat, let's attack them. They be checking for the content. You tired of that nonsense. No gimmicks, break limits. Quality is our promise. This is more than a show. This is a way of life. Cause the game, as it grows, takes us to higher heights. Check the stats before you check me. And don't tell me who the greatest if you don't know the history. Robert Ramon and Carl Close, the new big three, and if the opinions ain't from them, don't bring them to me, cause I go off like a rocket launcher. Man, I just ate the beat, I'm a real monster. I can hear the crowd chanting MVP, that's my mantra. Here's a standing on for the opinionated bench warmers.
Welcome to the Opinionated Benchwarmers podcast, episode 161. The Opinionated Benchwarmers are back to do what we do best, and that's discuss sports. I'm here with my brother, none other than Ramon. Los is not going to be on this episode. He has some other things to take care of, but I'm happy to be here just talking sports and doing what we do. What's up, Ramon? How you feeling, bro?
Feeling pretty good, bro. Feeling pretty good. Pretty good day so far. Nothing kind of crazy or outlandish, but it's always a good time. We can just do what we do, kind of sit around, give you that kind of barbershop type talk, that kind of talk that you'll have just when you're hanging out with your boys and things of that sort. So I always kind of look forward to these. I always look forward to this opportunity to give the listeners what they really want to hear. Shout out to Los in his absence. We're going to hold it down for you, bro. But like I say, I try not to talk too much in the beginning. I just want to let us get on into it. So let's let it flow, bro.
Yeah, man, you don't have to. You don't have to put on for the listeners, man. We both heard after what we witnessed last night. I hate to start on a low note. Obviously, if you don't know what we're talking about, both LSU graduates, you know, our LSU Tigers are facing Iowa, which was a tough task. And we fell short, you know, and, you know, now's the time on our platform to finally be able to air out this stuff so we can feel better and move to some higher stuff, higher level stuff. But we got some Final Four talk coming. And we plan on talking about the landscape of the NBA down the stretch. And, of course, we will get into some side conversations that you may find interesting, that we may find interesting. But we will start with last night in LSU falling to Iowa, a game that I thought that they was within reach. I think that the better team did not win. I think LSU, from a talent aspect, has the talent. Not all the pieces fell into place for us. I mean, when Caitlin Clark drops 40 points, we already know what it is. Not to take away anything from that special talent. And we'll get into her a little deeper in a moment. But, you know, I didn't feel good about last night. And I had some true questions. And I'm in no position to question the great Kim Mulkey, Hall of Fame coach, three-time champion, four-time champion. We was the fourth one. At LSU, and how she's turned this program around in such a sharp notice to where LSU basketball, women's basketball, has exceeded men's basketball at LSU. And she's only been the coach for 3 years, and, you know, she's been to the tournament all 3 years, won a championship in her second year. So I'm not in a position to question her, Ramon, but, you know, I do have some questions, respectfully, you know, about how we strategized last night. Mostly against Caitlin Clark. And, you know, I don't understand what our strategy was defensively. Now, I want to preface this by saying this. I'm not taking anything away from Caitlin and how special she is as a talent. I think that all the coverage that she get is justified. She's an all-time scorer in NCAA history. Accolades down the line. But, you know, I think defensively I was just disappointed in how, you know, Kim decided to strategize against it. And I get that that's only a small part of the game, but that's a huge part in my eyes, because once Caitlin gets it going, Iowa gets it going. And, you know, from a talent aspect, I don't think Iowa matches our talent, but Ramon, I was just disappointed in how Kim handled that. Maybe you could, you know, give us your insight on what you saw too as well.
Yeah, no, honestly, as you were alluding to, I think that a big part of the game was, to me, the fact that Kim Mulkey got out coached. in this game. You know, I think that coming in, as you mentioned, from a defensive game plan standpoint, I remember leading up to the game and talking to family, talking to different people, and I just automatically assume, you know, Flaje is going to be the one that's guarding Caitlin Clark because Flaje Johnson has been the one who's taken on that kind of assignment all season. When LSU has played the big names, when they even played South Carolina and they needed somebody to guard Powell on the perimeter, what did they do? They said, hey, Flaje Johnson, go get her. And so my whole thing was when I saw them initially start off and having Haley Van Lith on Caitlin Clark, I'm looking and saying that there's nothing. And I mean, no shade or shot at Haley. She gave her the best effort she could give, but there's no way, shape, or form that she is the best option to defend Caitlin Clark. One, she can't match up with lateral quickness, the lateral quickness of Caitlin. Number two, from a height standpoint, it doesn't work. Number three, from a length standpoint, it doesn't work. Number four, from an athleticism standpoint, it doesn't work. None of the key things that you would really need to have a shot at guarding Caitlin Clark were there. And so I thought that the first misstep was for Kim Mulkey to start off with that and then to not only see how bad it started, but to then go back to it once you brought Haley Van Lith back into the game. My thing and my thought process defending the Caitlin Clark, you had a couple options. Either you let her do her and you stop and you try to shut down everybody else, or your whole thing and game plan is to try to blitz her and see if the others can beat you. My thing with her letting Haley Van Lith guard her, you gave Caitlin everything she wanted to have because not only was she able to be the scorer that she wanted to be, but then because Haley couldn't stay in front of her, then she was able to break down the defense. Of course, help side is going to have to come. They're going to have to rotate. And then it left the shooters open. So you let Caitlin be a scorer and a facilitator, which is what you absolutely cannot do. So that's the quick little thoughts right there. I think I see you want to kind of chime in right quickly. I have other thoughts as well too on the game, but that's the quickest thing right there.
Hey, we ain't got nothing but time. It's just me and you. So
Yep.
no, but you brought up good points. And from a visual aspect for our listeners, you know, Haley Van Lith is 5'7". Caitlin is listed at 6 feet. So there, like you mentioned, there's an extreme disadvantage. And it's so many things we could break down in this game. And I think as a person has been following LSU and women's basketball in general, I don't think I watch all of them. I watch NC State. I've been watching Tech. I've been watching UCLA. I've been watching USC with Juju. And I will say, Haley Van Lith is one of the most talented college players in the country. And I know she hasn't shown that with LSU, and we'll get to that in a moment. And it goes into Kim as well. And, you know, but she averaged 20 points in Louisville. She was a scorer, a pure scorer. She transferred because she said she wanted to learn the point guard position. But I think that the fault is to a fault, you know, because I think Kim committed to that too much, to where I feel like anything you've been trying to do in the regular season, you got to throw that out the window, and you have to do what you have to do to win that particular game. I've said this many a times, you remind maybe on the side, that Haley has no business playing point guard. That's not her role. That's not what she's good at. And as much as she wanted to try to learn that position, we saw it throughout the SEC tournament. One mistake, one turnover, Haley was on the bench. And Poe was in. And we saw that last night. Haley made one bad pass, and then Haley gave up a bad three. She went under the screen instead of to going over the screen against Caitlin. Caitlin shot it 30 feet, made it, boom. Haley's on the bench. So I think, you know, Haley's not putting herself in these games. Haley's not strategizing. Haley's not dictating who she defends or not. Kim put her in that position. So as many as people as trying to tear Haley down, and I know she had a bad game last night, you know, Haley, she's fighting a losing battle. She's not a point guard. It's SEC level basketball. You will get exposed. If you're not paying the right position, you will get exposed. That's how talented these girls are on this level and in this league and league-wide, countrywide now, as we've seen. But I just feel like Haley was put in a bad spot. I mean, and then once you let a person, a special player like Caitlin, get it going, the ocean, the ball, the rim turns into an ocean for a talent like that. Once she get into her groove, now I feel as though we played Caitlin well and we was able to frustrate her because Poa frustrated her. Poa gave up some points, but Poa with her length and her height can really frustrate a player like Caitlin. And we did that. Now, up until a point, and in the second half, we came out. The game was tied at halftime, and then we come out, and then Haley gives up two buckets. Like, we have to make an adjustment. And like you said, Flaje did not defend Haley until 3 minutes left in the game. It's too late then. And by far, this entire tournament, I know that Flaje has averaged 20 points throughout this tournament, but we don't really need her offense per se, I would say. You know, I don't know if you agree with that, but I think Anissa, Anissa, if you put Haley in a position to score, and then
Michaela, you have Angel.
You got Michaela. So, you know, I don't understand why you're going to be like, hey, Flaje, I need you. This is your assignment. And Barry, I don't know. Maybe Kaylin would have had 35 points, but, you know, at the end of the day, if you frustrate Kaylin, you can knock off the game. And that's what we did last year, but we didn't do it this year, and Kaylin did what she did.
Yeah,
so, but my point is all that to say, not to get lost in it, is Haley was put in a bad position, and I put that all on Kim. And unfortunately, when somebody drops 40 points on you like Kaylin and you didn't do anything besides that, I don't think you can blame Haley, because Haley was just fighting a losing battle. She did the best that she could.
No, I agree 100% with that. And I think that also, too, that, you know, there's times where you have to adjust to your personnel, as you were mentioning. And I don't think that, granted, it's tough, like you said, to talk about
exactly
when she's a four-time champion. But my thing is, you have to be able to adjust to your personnel. And so Kim Mulkey's in her offenses, and it's because of who she was as a player, she needs a pure point guard. This year, she did not have a pure point guard. And so my thing is, sometimes you have to change the style in which you play. Kim loves, her thing is, she's going to play inside out. She wants to dump it down into the post and play from that. And so my thing is, what she does at times to me is a disservice to her perimeter players. Because let me ask you this. When over the course of that game, or over just watching LSU in general, how often do you see them get good looks for their perimeter players? How often do you see them running any type of screens, any back screens or anything like that to free up their perimeter players for shots? How often, even last night, did they even think, let's make Kaitlin play some defense. Let's make her come off a couple of screens. Let's let her feel a couple body blows of her having to deal with an Anissa Morrow screen or an Angel Reese screen. Nothing of that sort. And so one thing that I will say to me, for not just last night, but even Kim Mulkey going forward, and I really don't know how I can tell Kim Mulkey this because of how great she is, but
exactly.
But her offense has to change and modernize a little bit. Like, the game is, unfortunately, it's not played so much inside out anymore. You see a little bit more of outside in, or you see more five out or four, you know. So I think that there just needs to be a little bit more there too of creating opportunities for those perimeter players. But like you said, I mean, still with all that being said, you got to have hats off to Kaitlin Clark and just how amazing she is. Kaitlin Clark is a rare talent. I mean, I can ask you, for me, I didn't know anything about Iowa basketball, Iowa women's basketball, until Kaitlin Clark showed up on the scene.
Ramon, you are the transition master, because that's where I wanted to go. You know, I got into sort of a – I don't do this often, because the level of sports that we discuss on this podcast is on a different level. So I don't talk sports often with other people outside of, you know, how your team doing, you know, in general. But when I look at a Kaitlin Clark and the Kaitlin Clark effect and what she has meant to the sport of women's basketball and what she's able to do and the excitement that she has brought, you know, I'm looking at the ratings of the viewership of the last game. It came out not too long ago that it was 14 million viewers. And that's just that game alone. It's the most viewed women's game in history. And, you know, of course, Angel Reese had a lot to do with that as well, and we'll get to that in a moment. But my point is, when you have got people like Kaitlin, and hear me out, and I said this take, and you let me know if I'm crazy. I think that in 5 years, we'll look back in 2024, or 2022 and 2024. This has been brewing for some years. I know a lot of people have just started watching women's basketball. I'll fill you in on what I'll fill you in on what you've missed up until this point. This has been brewing for years. This has been brewing for years. We've always had these standouts like Asia Wilson, you know, Brittany Griner, like you mentioned earlier, Of course, Simone Augustus, if you want to go back, the way that these girls are preparing, and I think, you know, you even turn back the hands of time to maybe Simone and the stories that I've heard of how hard she used to work. Waking up at her dad used to wake up at 5 in the morning doing dribbling drills and shooting shots and getting well. And then you look at Simone, if you look back at her history, was on Sports Illustrated front cover in the 8th grade. She was by far that much ahead of her competition. I'm going somewhere, man. I hope I'm not going long-winded here. But
Nah, you good, you good.
it, you know, now you have at least 30 girls, 30 to 40 girls, or 50 girls that are on that same regime and working that hard, that much harder. So now you have a Paige Beckers. Now you have a Hailey Van Lith. Now you have an Angel Reese. Now you have a Caitlin Clark. Now you have the young lady out
Juju.
of Juju Watkins, which we're gonna get to that one. She deserves a segment on her own as well. And then you know you got a Cameron Brink. You have so many girls that are committed. And then okay, now you bring Kobe into this fold and the commitment that he made to women's basketball and having an AAU team with his daughter Gigi, and who we have said what I'm about to say next. We wanted her to make it so bad because of what she would have meant to the sport of basketball. But now that we're here, I said all that to say this: 5 years down the line, I want to market that. The early, I will say the 2020s, the early 2020s will mark the era that we'll look back and call it the Caitlin Clark era. The reason why I said that, because I feel as though Caitlin Clark's effect on the WNBA will be merely similar than what we've seen in an MJ. What we've seen in a Magic and Bird. Now, I know people hear that and be like, okay, this guy's is off his rocker. And I'm not saying on the level of skill. I'm not going to compare levels of skill, but as far as popularity of the sport, what you have brewing now, you have true rivalries brewing. If LSU would have made it to the championship game and South Carolina made it, I think that the viewership would have been close to 15 or 16 million because that rivalry it would between Angel Reese and that team is brewing. You have this rivalry that had brewed between Iowa and LSU, with LSU putting them out, LSU putting Iowa out on their way to the championship. Well, won the championship game against Iowa last year, and that is the popularity that will translate into the WNBA. When you look at the NBA, the history of the NBA, it was Magic and Bird. The NBA was nowhere near the popular sport that it was before Magic and Bird. Magic and Bird rivalry translated from Indiana State and Michigan State to the NBA. The rest is history. Then you had a guy, birth of Michael Jordan, that took it, the sport, to a whole nother level. We know that that's the history. I think we are seeing that transpiring right now in women's basketball. So maybe that's a hot take. I don't know, but I do feel like Caitlin Clark, she's the leader of this era, but you got Juju right on her heels.
Yeah.
You got Juju right on her heels, but you know, I hate to go in that long rant, but what are your thoughts on that, man?
Yeah, no, I definitely see it from the aspect, and I know we may get to this a little bit later as well too. But honestly, when you look at it right now from a college basketball sense, the women's game is more popular than the men's game right now.
Yeah,
If it
no doubt
gets
about
down
it.
to it, and you talk to me about watching, let's just say, let's remove LSU out of it, because you know I'm always be biased as it relates to that. Let's just say you talking about Iowa playing against South Carolina or Iowa in this UConn game coming up, and I gotta decide whether I'm watch that or a men's college basketball. And I get it, I understand they're on different nights. I'm not confused by that, but I'm just saying if it were on the same night, my TV is more gonna be on that matchup of women's college basketball than men's college basketball right now. And so I definitely agree with you. They were just talking about, I'm trying to see if this was. What class was this? If it was called the 2019 or the 2020 class, that they were saying from a high school standpoint, featured Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark,
Haley.
Angel Reese, Haley, man, look, like it, and Camila Cardoso. And
And Shorty from Virginia Tech that's transferring out. I can't
you
think of
talking
her
about
name
a
right now.
more
She's in
was
that.
yep.
The
And
Moore's in
so
that Georgia.
yep, and yep, that's her name. Yeah. And so the thing about it is, like you said, no, I totally see it. And then Caitlin Clark, man, she's just special. You know, I was seeing something kind of a couple months ago that was just talking about the ooh, kind of the difficulties that she'll have transitioning into the league. And in my opinion, and it could be potentially higher, but I
When
think from
you
day one, Caitlin Clark comes into the league as a top 10, if not already top 5 player from day one.
Shooting like that translates.
Yeah.
Steph proved that. Shooting like that translates. That's a different level of shooting. That's what I was trying to tell my coworker today. I'm like, man, I can't. I'm blowing my mind. He's like, her size, you know, that. I'm like, man, look, you know, that popularity. And that, you know, that's what I mean. Like, you know, not even, we're not even talking about her skills, but the popularity that Kaylin, like you said, we didn't know who Iowa basketball was until her. They filled up a football stadium, Ramon.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
of Kaylin.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, great points. I mean, I think, you know, we both share that sentiment, but I think that we'll look back and see, we'll point to this era. Now, me and you both share this same sentiment that Gigi would have been the Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
the
man, Gigi.
Gigi would have been, you know, when you look at her film at her age, I mean, she would have just, what would she be like? At this point, she'd be like, well, she about to go to college. Probably end up at UConn.
Yeah, she was going to end up at UConn. That was going to be nasty, man.
Now, when you think about this, Ramon, too, has transitioned out, you know, to add to that point, when we look at college women's sports, and we've been covering this for years, we didn't just start covering it when it got popular. Because me and you remember, we remember the UConn days of Geno, where it was only two teams. And then that one year, LSU, where they had Sylvia Fowles, Simone Augustus, and those, that's when it was just them two. You know, then you had your days of Tennessee with Candace Parker. But now you're seeing that the talent is getting better, it's getting better, and it's getting better. This tournament is getting better. And that is a result of, like I said, the descendants of the Simones, the descendants of, you know,
your Diana Taurasi's of the
Lisa
world.
Lisa Les, Diana Taurasi.
Your Maya Moore's of the world, you know.
Man, when I look at the men's sport and when I look at high school basketball too as well, I'm not going all over the place. I'm going somewhere. This is all correlation. And Ramon, we've sat together and watched how advanced these guys are in high school these days now. Just shooting step backs. Man, you know how many suicides I would get if I was shooting a step, if anyone shot a step back, man? Like, right. You know, opting for a three on a fast break as opposed to a layup. The game is changing. I think women are catching up. And these ladies are working hard. And I think you got the Caitlins, Clayton and Clark. You got somebody 8 years old watching how special this young lady is and is dribbling their driveway right now. And they coming.
Yeah.
They coming.
Nah, 100%.
But not to spend too much time there. We do have the Final Four to kind of discuss. We might as well just start with the women. Of course, you got South Carolina. NC State, and then you got UConn and Iowa. So the one I'm looking forward to the most, obviously, is Iowa and UConn. Paige Beckers is a beast. Tore ACL last year, sat out, but she's back now. She's averaging over 20 points. She can facilitate. I am so impressed with that young lady. Like, Paige is like just her control of the game. And it's not said enough. It's like she just flies under the radar. But that's Ramon. Paige is special, man. She's special. I mean, Kaylin can shoot those long, but to me, Paige is just, and then her length and her size and her you know, her approach to the game. I mean, she's just special, man. That's a matchup. We could go quick here. I think UConn edge them out. I think Geno, it should be a great game. But I feel like Geno is going to look at what LSU didn't do, and he's going to do it. And I think that Paige will, you know, obviously. And UConn just being even Aaliyah, you know, is talented. They got another guard there, number 12. I can't think of her name, but she's a facilitator. But with the talent UConn have, they should take care of Iowa with no problems.
Yeah, I think that overall, like you said, you know, UConn is a more talented team, and that's with them losing I can't think of her name, but that's with them losing one of their three best players, Fudd, I think, earlier.
They lost her.
And like you said, I mean, when talking about Paige, and this is not taken away from anybody, man, Paige was, she was that one.
She was the one.
Before she went down with the injuries. And like you said, she's had her resurgence. And like you said, I don't see Geno making the same mistakes that Kim Mulkey made. Caitlin Clark is special, though, man. She gives you a puncher's chance anytime she steps on that
you
court.
You saw
she
that.
Gives you a puncher's chance.
But if you can frustrate her, you can knock her off her pivot. I don't know why people don't play off of that more. If you frustrate her, you can knock her off her game.
That's what happened in the championship game last year. LSU
exactly.
frustrated her between Alexis Morris defending her and frustrating her, and Poa drawing some charges on her last year. That frustrated her. But that one is a tough one. I do slide, you know, more with UConn on that one. But, man, Caitlin Clark gives you a puncher's chance, definitely.
Yep. And then on the other side, you got South Carolina, North Carolina State. I think I will need to spend much time there.
Yeah,
South Carolina. So we got a South Carolina UConn championship.
Yeah.
I mean, South Carolina gonna win it all. I mean, nobody's gonna say it. Like, they're at 1 through 10. I mean, when I see they have people on their bench that can take over games, it looks like they've been coasting the whole tournament. They're well coached. Don Staley is a genius.
Yeah.
And a great recruiter. She's who Geno was. She's becoming who Geno was, you know. And I thought Kim was going to take that away from her. But after this go around, I don't know, man.
I think it's going to remain interesting. I think that, you know, honestly, like you said, she would be the number one coach at this point. Now, what I will say is, you know, no one will ever replicate whatever Geno did. You know, that's just
what, like 5 seasons in a row, no losses, yeah, or something crazy, something nuts.
That run will never be replicated.
Not to take anything away, but I think that further proves our point that we were saying earlier in the pod, that the women's game has changed. It was women with the top 10 women would go to UConn in the country, and then they'll go somewhere else. That was it. That was the only choice. You're either going to UConn or you're going somewhere. You're either going to UConn or you're going to Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, top five people, that's where they're going. But so we flipped over to the men's side here. The men has been a little less popular. I would like to challenge you, but you're very, very sports savvy. But realistically, how many of these college boys' names we knew before the tournament?
Man, honestly, man,
compared to the women, no,
it's not even close. Honestly,
I might have known just one, maybe. Yeah. Rob Dillingham, pretty special out of Kentucky, so I started kind of catching on to him a little later.
Yeah,
but.
And Baycott out of North Carolina, that's been there for like half our adult life. He's been over there forever, but yeah, like you said, man, I don't know, it's just not the same.
So you got Alabama and UConn. UConn has been won their last three games with a 20-point differential. They look like a train that cannot be stopped. Alabama is sitting at averaging 90 points per game, which tells me they're holding opponents to 81. So meaning that they just outscore people. I've watched a few games during the regular season. They've done that throughout the whole year. That's how they win games. If the shots aren't falling, if they're not able to score at a high clip, then they probably will lose. Now, at this point, it has worked, but I don't think it's going to work against a team like UConn, who's a little bit more well-rounded. They don't need their shots to fall. They play a little bit better defense than Alabama, so I might have to go with UConn here. Unless Alabama just go completely nuts. I'm talking about shoot 65% from the field, 50% from three. But if it's not that, UConn should pretty much win. And I mean, the spread's at 12 points right now. I mean, I would take it up to 18 to me.
Yeah.
I think they may win by 20 again.
I mean, you got to look at it. I mean, who has challenged UConn so far this tournament?
No one.
No one. I mean, they've had, when you have a game where you go on a 30-0 run, that just kind of shows and signifies.
It was so demoralizing, man. Like, imagine being on that sideline and you hadn't scored in 30 minutes real time. Like,
So the thing about it is, I think that one, you know, to me is relatively easy to pick. I would be shocked. I would be shocked if UConn does not win that game.
Yeah, and I'm looking at repeaters here. You know, they got me on there. That's how good UConn has been. I don't. Who else has done that? Who else has won back to back years?
You talking about in recent times or just historically? Yeah.
Historically,
well, Duke has had a run of.
I knew it could. I knew that. I walked right into that one, man.
So we got to go ahead and throw that. We got to go ahead and throw that out there. I'm trying to see. I'm trying to see if you did you no that they might have just won one. I was trying to see if UConn did it in the Mecca Okafor era.
I mean, when I throw out the blue chippers, I mean, did Kansas do it? UCLA probably back in the
Oh
day.
yeah, no, UCLA definitely back.
UCLA might have done it. I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know many of these.
Let's
Oklahoma
see.
A&M in the 40s. Did Georgetown do it? Kentucky did it in the 40s. But recently,
I mean, your
Florida.
most re
Oh, how you
Florida.
forget
I
about
did.
Florida?
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's the
we
team.
lived through them Florida days in the
Yeah, that's
early
the team that had
2000s.
the
Yeah, that's
run.
the team right there, man. Billy Donovan, Joakim Noah.
Al Horford.
Just a bunch of guys that I never would expect out of all of those folks that Al Horford would have had the best career out of all of them. Out of
Yeah.
Chris Brewer, Corey
Corey
Brewer.
Brewer, your cousin.
Chill out.
Wait.
Anyway, on the other side of this thing, we got North Carolina State's Cinderella themselves, which I'm mad I didn't take that bet, but they'll be playing
Purdue.
Purdue. Okay, Purdue. And my writing's terrible. NC State, man, I don't know how I didn't think of that. They ran through the ACC tournament, which is not easy to do. When you look at, you got North Carolina, you got Duke, you got Clemson, who made a long, deep run. That's a tough conference. And here they find themselves in the Final Four. Nobody thought they is, but I think Cinderella, I think it's over. I think Purdue finds a way to get it done. Now, speaking of Purdue, Tennessee, I was shocked that they didn't take this. Speaking of coaching, which I don't know anything from anything, I'm not a coach. I did coach, me and Ramon coached for a couple years, and we had some success.
Yeah.
But I thought that they should have attacked Zach Edey more, because I found just throughout this tournament that Edey is not a rim protector. Edey is 7'4". If you cannot protect the rim in the NBA, because he can't shoot, right? He's worthless. So he can't even be a role player to me. I think defensively he disappoints me. And that's why I feel like Tennessee, they settled too much for the three. Like Luka Nek had it going, and I get it, but I felt like they should have attacked Zach Edey more.
Yeah, and I mean the thing about it is, one of the main things is just like we were mentioning, and I'm not comparing him to Caitlin Clark, and I'm definitely not doing that. But you got to go and you got to attack that guy that has it going on the other end. I mean, you sit there and let a guy get 40. Nah, make that man work defensively. And so, like you said, I don't think that they, attacked him enough. But ultimately, man, Purdue is just they kind of tough, man. They
Yeah,
kind of tough.
they're a well-rounded team.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel that the best thing for us to see, and I think we kind of basically said it at this point, but it's seeing that UConn Purdue matchup. Like,
Yeah, that's a championship for me.
yeah, that's what
And
college ba that's what men's basketball needs right now.
look, I mean, my bracket might have did trash, but I did have UConn winning it all. But I
Yeah, I
mean,
know.
I don't think I have a shot. I don't know. Do
No,
these points?
you do honestly. So if UConn is to win it all, you will win. If UConn gets to the championship game and loses, I'll win. If UConn loses before the championship, it's a tie between me and Los, and I don't know what happens with that. So,
You be thinking, bro. You just spent a little time on this, man. I
yeah.
just stopped looking at it. I was like, man, there's no way I'm gonna catch these guys.
Yeah,
But
that Tennessee L hurt me.
and I had to clean something up. The viewership for that Iowa versus LSU ladies game was 12.3 million. So I think I said 14. We're trying to be a little more responsible on the podcast in our reporting. But it is being reported. Just some fun facts I have pulled up. It is that it is ESPN's best audience for a college basketball game, men or women's ever, which I already said. And it is the second best NCAA tournament game of 2024 so far, men's and women. It also beats four of the five NBA Finals games and every World Season game in the most recent postseason. That is crazy. People were locked in. I also saw a tidbit somewhere. I don't know the number, but it also said that this game was the most gambled on game, I think, of the day. So you had Major League yesterday, you had NBA, and this game was the most gambled on. So people are engaged and locked in with women's sports, and that adds on more to our point about the Caitlin Clark effect. I feel like this will peg at the Caitlin Clark era. There are so many talented women that deserve a hand in this era, but I think because of her star power, I think I'll peg this era 5. So 5 years, come back, check this episode. I really do believe that you will see a different type of women's sports in
100%. Just a little tidbit to add on that too. I really think that, you know, it really to me has been boosted between Caitlin Clark effect and to not seem like a homer, but LSU as well.
Oh yeah,
Like
Angel Reese,
what
for
Angel
sure.
Reese, what
Angel Reese
Flauzé brings to the
celebrity.
table.
I would be more inclined to say that Angel Reese celebrity really supersedes Caitlin's celebrity, in a sense. We all know Caitlin's probably is the better player. But anyway, we didn't even talk about this too. We saw the press conference, and mentally, I hope thoughts and prayers with her. I hope that, her being harassed, and I just want to strictly talk about her future. To me, I think that Angel should stay another year. And I say this why she probably won't, but I think that she should, because I feel as though her at 6'3", she does have that quick second jump, but she has to develop some type of jump shot. I saw her go 0 for 3 versus I was telling her, please stop shooting. Please don't take a jump shot. Like, if it's not a drop step layup, please stop. I think she would have to develop that part of her game, because I feel like with her size, they have a lot of great big women in the game. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how they call it, what they call it, big men. We call them big men. I say big women. So, I mean, that sounds bad, but they have a lot of great centers and forwards in the game. Asia
Not you
Wilson.
almost sounding like Charles Barkley over there. He talks about San Antonio.
So, I kind of wonder about that. I know she won't. It probably is not good for business for her to stay, but I just feel like she's staying on the year to develop a game.
Yeah, like you said, from a developmental sense, it probably would make more sense for her to stay. But honestly, I just think in the grand scheme of things, you know, like you alluded to some of the things that she mentioned in the press conference. I think just from holistically, from a mental health standpoint and all of that, I think that it's, you know, time for her to go. You know, I think that she got to kind of get out of it. You saw, of course, all the hate, of course, that came to her after the game even ended, and people being irrational about certain things. Like, there's never been an issue between she and Caitlin Clark. Like, that was sheerly just basketball, trash talk, things of that sort,
Competitiveness,
competitiveness. And we've been there in different spaces. And so, I think still for her, ultimately, you know, I think that, like you said, from a developmental sense, it would be great for her to add that to her repertoire. But I think that, you know, maybe she just needs to get into the lab in the off season and take that jump, take that leap. The things that she does have, you know, within her bag are going to translate the way in which she rebounds the ball, the way in which she defends. You know, she has all of the intangibles as well too. And so I think that, you know, while a transition would be a little bit more difficult for her because you're not about to dominate the offensive glass like you do, you know, from a college standpoint, it'll be more difficult. But I just think holistically at this point, it's that natural transition for her.
Yeah, I agree. And here we are jumping out of turn. I hope you guys enjoy it, but we'll get back on track here. So who do you have winning the championship? Did you go over that?
Oh,
I
you talking
think
about you talking about
UConn
for a
and
minute?
Purdue. Your UConn and Purdue.
Yeah, I think that ultimately when it comes down to it, man, UConn does look like the best team. That may cause me to lose
It
the
ain't
bracket
close,
challenge.
man.
That
Yeah.
might cause me to lose the bracket challenge, but UConn is the best team.
Well, you got my cash out, my brother. So.
I'll be rooting for them to lose, honestly. Let them win
You
this first game and then they can lose in the championship game.
ain't nah, yeah, I doubt it, but we'll see. It should be nice. So we lined it up for the championship. We gave you our favorites to win it all on both sides. We'll transition into the NBA. We have something quickly, but that transition will go. I'm seeing Zach Edey rated it. I saw an analyst say that Zach Edey should be the number one pick in the NBA draft. Now, I'm not gonna say, the landscape of the NBA and the draft looks way different with just all these G leagues and overseas players and these prospects. And I get Zach Edey 7'4". That's Shaq was 7'4", 7'5". I mean, he dropped 40
No.
to
Shaq?
Shaq 7'4".
No, Shaq 7-1, man.
Wow, I don't know where I get that from.
Yeah.
Oh no, Yao Ming was
Yao
seven.
Ming,
Yao
yeah,
Ming
Yao
was
Ming was
7'4". He
7-6.
might have been seven. Dang. Yeah, he. But anyway, you get what I'm saying. Thank you for the correction, though. So I mean, he should be dropping 40 and 20. But when I look at how, like I said, he defends the cup, how It wasn't Tennessee. It was a team before Tennessee, and their guards attacked him, and they almost lost. But I was just looking like, man, he doesn't have any help side defense. Like, you know how AD, our guards don't have to be the best perimeter defenders because if they get inside, AD will correct their mistakes. Zach Edey doesn't really even challenge anybody at the rim consistently to me. Now, I hear the guys out there. He did have a game-winning block against Tennessee. I get that, but consistent is the word. That was the first time I seen him consistently play defense. Zach Edey, I don't know about him being a top five NBA pick. I think if he's worth being drafted, being 7'4", and he does have some stuff with him, but with you not being able to shoot in this game today, I don't know if he'll translate.
I really don't know, like you said, if his game translates the best into the league. We've even seen guys, and don't get it mixed up when I'm saying this, because he's not this to me kind of guy or skilled in this way. But we've seen bigs that really work in the NCAA that it hasn't been able to translate to the NBA. I think of my guy Jahlil Okafor, and his style of play, and that just did not translate honestly to the league. And so when I look at a guy like Zach Edey, the only kind of saving grace for him is the fact that, to me, I'm gonna just say it, I think that this is a weak NBA draft. I don't really see, to me, like a just signature bona fide just kind of star to me in this NBA draft, where it's like, okay, God, man, this guy's gonna come in and he's gonna make a difference. There's not a Wemby in this draft, obviously. There's not a Zion Williamson in this draft. There's not even a Ja Morant in this draft. So his only saving grace is the fact that he is in a, to me, a weak draft, and that's the thing that could propel his stock forward. But he's not a guy that moves the needle big time for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think about a Walker Kessler. Like, that was another guy at Auburn that I was like, I really struggled in seeing the value that he could bring to the league. 7 foot 1 forward out of Auburn. And he's carved out a role with the Jazz. And it clicked to me. I'm like, okay, yeah, he could defend the rim in college. And that did translate. I don't see that in Zach Edey. So I'm like, even if he, I mean, without him being able to shoot, he would need to be a great rim protector and a good help side defender to carve out a role to get some minutes, and he's not that. So I don't understand why he's being so hyped up. But at 7'4", you got to take the chance. I just say, if I'm a GM, I'm not trying to take the chance that high up in the draft.
Yeah, I agree.
As we transition into the NBA further, we know that we're down in the home stretch of things. Right now, our Lakers are battling as we record against the Raptors. And we're currently in the ninth seed, which I think we're doing all this work. We've only lost two games of the last, what, eight? And only to be locked in this ninth seed. I really don't think that we're gonna really rise in the seed. I think we'll be in the play-in tournament in the ninth seed, as we said that on a couple podcasts ago. But then we saw Joel Embiid come back today as we record this. You'll hear this tomorrow, so obviously he's playing on Tuesday. That's huge. How huge is that for the 76ers?
I mean, that means everything for them. When you get your guy back, your franchise guy, who allows everybody to then slot back into their natural roles and who they are, and being a supporting cast around them. I mean, that team is built around Joel Embiid. Like, that is his team. And so I think that when you have a guy like Joel Embiid come back, it automatically elevates that team. It elevates them and what they could potentially do from a postseason standpoint. Now, I think that honestly, obviously they don't want to continue to sit in the spot that they sit right now and potentially be in that eighth seed, because that's not going to go too well for them in that first round if they have to play the Boston Celtics. But, I do believe that if they can find their way, and can kind of rise in the standings, like really towards the end and close out well, let's just say if they potentially got to the sixth seed, I don't really probably see that happening. But if they miraculously got there, that would change a lot of things for them. Even getting to the seventh seed and potentially playing the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round, I'm not saying that that would necessarily go well for them, but I think that it would be a better opportunity than the Boston Celtics. So saying all of that to say, really, Joel Embiid, he just elevates that team completely. Like, he is the guy, he is the MVP. He is the one that that organization is built on. And so I believe that even from a postseason standpoint, he raises their ability To go from being definitely first round and out to being a team that's can be second round, make the conference finals. I don't know if I see them having a chance of really making the NBA finals, but he just raises, their potential so much.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have anything to add on that. You laid it out. I think he was our MVP, league MVP if he would have missed so many games. But obviously, that's probably going to go to Jokic now. But I will say this, just with the landscape. I mean, you see, I mentioned the Lakers. We're sitting in the ninth seed. We're 42-33. If you look at last year, that record would have been good enough to be fourth in the West. So that's just kind of give the listeners a little context and how tough the Western Conference is. It's a gauntlet. And I'm not sure, right now, why I lie with things, but I will say this. The Nuggets are beyond my favorites to run the table again. I think that they're legitimate. I think they're one of the for real teams in the Western Conference. But the Nuggets, man, they with Jokic and the way that he impacts the game. It's gonna be tough, man. They might repeat.
Yeah, no, it's definitely gonna be tough. Like, I mean, just kind of looking at the onset of things and kind of just the outlook at this point. Like you said, from a Western Conference standpoint, they would be my favorites. From an Eastern Conference standpoint, Boston would be my favorites. And that would be, to me, an ugly NBA Finals because I don't like either of those teams. But I would honestly have to root for the Denver Nuggets in a matchup like that because I can't see Boston get 18. But
But
I
to
think
see
that.
Jokic get back to back, he got league MVP. Is he's the greatest ever? Is he the, how they be waiting on somebody that look like him to be the great hope? You know how that go.
No, I agree, but I still think ultimately there's no way I can find myself rooting for the Celtics.
Oh,
There's
never.
no way.
Even though I do like Tatum, I
Yeah,
do
Tatum is
like
my guy, but he can win a
but.
championship in LA, not in Boston.
But Tatum also, he really does. He becomes, we'll get to this closer to the playoff, but he does become a shell of himself in the postseason. I'm hoping that he can change that narrative this year.
Yeah, we'll see. Like it's a little up and down for him. He has some moments where he's shown up and been that guy, but it becomes a little bit of a roller coaster for him in the postseason.
Yeah, ASAP. So, anyway, man, I think we did it again. We appreciate all everybody who has hung around this long to listen to us. As always, like I like to say, follow us on @Benchwarmers on social media. That's Instagram, that's Twitter. Make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast, Opinionated Benchwarmers, wherever you like to listen to your podcast. And also, like I like to say, share with a friend. Get our name out there. Let people know if you enjoy what you heard, don't keep it to yourself, right? So that'll help us out. That'll do more than you ever know for us. So until next time, we're out of here.
Later.